This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable, a call to close Guantanamo and who's on the borders. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. Michael Myers joins us from our New York bureau. He's executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. And from Boston, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator, seen on the television show Beat the Press, which is seen in the Boston area. I thank you all for joining us. One of the things that we want to get to is something that is starting to make a lot of noise in Washington, D.C., Michael Myers, and that is that the Bush administration has allowed an Arab company to take over operations of major U.S. ports, including Miami and the New York area, because this company acquired the British-based company that ran these six U.S. ports. It is now a state-owned business of the United Arab Emirates. So many people concerned about this, obviously, post 9/11. A couple of Republican governors in New York and Maryland have made noise suggesting that they could go as far as canceling the lease agreements to these ports if, in fact, this goes through. The Bush administration has said, by virtue of Attorney General Gonzalez, that this has vested and everything is fine and dandy. The question begs here, are we being too careful?
Well, everything is not fine and dandy. The problem is that I think this sounds like, it smells like, it looks like more Arab bashing, quite frankly. The central question is, are our ports secure? Are they being inspected? Are the ships that are coming in being inspected, and by whom? And one would think that the Homeland Security Department, the folks over there, and everybody who's connected with the protection of our borders and ports, if we felt they were competent, if we felt they were doing their job effectively and efficiently without Arab bashing, we'd be a lot more confident about our security. But we do not feel confident because we feel that these people in our Homeland Security division and who protect the borders and the seas are not competent. So whether it's somebody from the United Arab Republic or somebody else that we subcontract to, that's not the issue. The issue is who's inspecting the inspectors.
Uh-huh. Callie, the idea of, as Michael Myers raises, Arab bashing, that is a huge concern of Arab Americans in this country, and we have quite frankly seen it time and time again since 9/11.
Oh, Michael's exactly right that there is a big part of this that is Arab bashing. And in fact, that's what raised the hackles of people instead of the focus, as Michael has said, about the security. In fact, port security has been at issue, and some legislators have raised this along the way, saying, hey, we've been concentrating too much on airplane security and transportation security on the ground, but what about our ports? They've been saying this over and over again. So when you combine the kind of fear that we have about the lapses that are already in place in some ports and maybe at all ports, and then add to that our suspicion around anybody Middle Eastern or Arab, then, you know, you get quite a ticking time bomb from a political standpoint. I'm actually quite surprised, I need to say, that understanding this, I mean, who knows this better than the Bush White House, that they would not have tried to vet this with certainly, we're talking about a Republican governor in New York. I mean, this is 9/11 country. I don't understand why that wouldn't have been something that they would at least have had a discussion about so as to prevent this kind of brouhaha, which is now going to lead to some are calling for legislation to ban the deal, and some are calling for oversight hearings. I mean, it's a big mess.
Mary, what of the idea that some will raise, and certainly those in the Bush administration, who will suggest that, look, we looked into this, it's been vetted, we're saying it's A-OK. The other side of that, of course, is suggesting by many who we see screaming that perhaps the job hasn't been as well done as they had hoped. Does this speak to the administration and the belief in their ability as well?
Yes, absolutely. It's another question of it's a demonstration of insensitivity on the part of the administration in the first place. And in the second place, I normally would believe Jimmy Carter when he says that this may be all right and they probably reviewed it. But since we have no confidence in Alberto Gonzalez after his testimony about wiretapping and how it's all legal despite the law, we have he's on that committee that reviewed it. We have no confidence in the Defense Department after Rumsfeld and all of the arguments about why we go to war and why we're there and how long we have to stay. We certainly have no confidence in Michael Chertoff after his testimony last week about Katrina and everything else he's been doing. So we've got a committee we can't trust when they tell us anything. And I don't think it's Arab bashing, by the way. I'm against racial profiling. I'm against Arab bashing, for one of the first to speak out against it, continue to say that we should look carefully at whatever country, whether it's Arab or not, that is going to be involved with the port, since we already know that port security is so lousy. One of the television
right.
networks
But as you know, Mary, the immediate call, as soon as they understood that this company was, in fact, a state-run company from the United Arab Emirates, it wasn't even a question of that. It was simply, right. No, can't be.
You know what else, Ed, though, Ed? I thought, as far as the administration is concerned, since they are so much in favor of getting rid of state-run companies, why are they even in favor of a state-run company, whether it's Arab mm-hmm. or not, mm-hmm. running some? So there are all of these inconsistencies, and there's something here that does not meet the eye in why they're doing this.
If this ain't Arab bashing, then I don't know what racial profiling is. This is Arab bashing.
People, all right, let me take us to another quagmire that the Bush administration finds itself in, and that is Secretary General Kofi Annan of the UN last week suggested the closing of Guantanamo Bay, the prison there, backing a conclusion that the United Nations-appointed independent panel came up with. The suggestion there is all of the detainees have been held without charges being brought forth. There's question of terror. We heard from White House spokesperson Scott McClellan, who after a while you've got to feel sorry for whether you like the politics or not,
I don't feel
suggesting
sorry.
That all detainees have been humanely treated and, quote, these are dangerous terrorists that we're talking about, end quote.
Mm. Well, we already know. Well, Callie.
Go ahead, Mary. Go ahead.
No. We already know that the people who are being held in Guantanamo Bay and have been held there all this time, most of them haven't been accused of anything. We already know that. That's documented. We already know that there's been torture there. That's been documented. There's evidence of it. And the United States has even admitted that some of it has gone on. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. We hold these people. Rumsfeld at first said we could hold them forever if we wanted to. It doesn't make any difference without charging them with anything. So I think that the United States, and even Blair in Britain, even though he sort of fumbled around with it, finally came out and said, you know, well, we should find a way to do something about Guantanamo Bay. So I think it's time to close it. I think the UN report is correct. And I think that the White House defense of it doesn't make any sense. It's just plain silly.
All right, Callie, let me play the role of the Bush administration and a finger point to you guys, and I'll point at Mary Frances Berry and just suggest that you don't get it. These folks are dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's a new day. We don't have time to give them the luxury of the benefit of the doubt.
Well, don't give them the benefit of the doubt. If that's the case, then take them to trial, accuse them of something, and let's get to the bottom of it. I mean, I think that's the problem for a lot of folks, and certainly that's what's highlighted in the UN report, is that these people are just being held. No charges are being made. We don't know who they are. It's all secret. I mean, the UN inspectors are not allowed to go in and see the procedures about how the questioning is taking place so that— You know, there's just no answers here. That's what the problem is. Maybe if some of these questions were answered, then other folks around the world would say, all right, we take your point, President Bush. These are dangerous terrorists. We've now investigated the cases. They look like they ought to be held for these charges. But that is not what is happening. And I think
all
the
right,
point
Michael
that
Myers.
Needs to be made here is that around the country, I mean, around the world, other people are finally stepping up and supporting Kofi Annan in his call for closing this.
All right, Michael Myers, I'll continue to play devil's advocate here and suggest mm-hmm. that, you know, you just don't get it. It takes time to build these cases. This is not cookie cutter. We're not going to put a time limit on. We continue to investigate. We want to make sure that when we take this to trial, we can mm-hmm. convict these dangerous terrorists.
Well, Ed, I will play devil with you. I'll play with you. You can also add that, look, torture, if this is torture, torture ain't what it used to be. Sleep deprivation, okay. Cultural slights, uh-huh. Exposure to extreme temperature, give them a blanket. Prolonged isolation, what do you want us to do with people who are regarded as dangerous? And particularly people who are, if released, are likely to not only be dangerous, but help provoke an attack on the United States sovereignty. These are real fears and real concerns. Now, going out of the role of devil's advocate, and there's also this UN report, or UN-sponsored report, there's also played devil's advocate a little more. There's a disrespect for the United Nations. This is an issue of sovereignty. And the United States is supposedly the most advanced judicial system in the world. And the question is, as Kelly, as Mary has put it, is what do you do with people who are regarded as dangerous? And I remember right after 9/11, a lot of public officials and former public officials, including Ed Koch, suggested that there might be a little bit of torture we could use in order to protect the United States. So I think that even if you close Guantanamo, you'd have other Guantanamo. You wouldn't call it Guantanamo, but you would have detention centers. And because you would have this fear of people who are really too dangerous to bring to trial or to be released in the general population. So this is a form of preventive detention. And the question is a judicial and a legal one. What will the Supreme Court do with this issue of preventive detention?
Well,
my guess
point
is they will okay it.
Can I make a quick point here?
Yeah,
look,
quick for me, Mary.
We do have detention centers in Europe. There have been stories about that where we're holding people. Also, how long can detention last? 9/11 was, 2001. We're in 2006. Are we talking about keeping people in prison forever? We've had 5 years to make a case about some of these people, and we have not. And there's the fundamental inconsistency with American values and our own principles about civil liberties, which is at bottom what's at issue here.
Oh, I agree.
All right, let me take us to another issue of whether or not you can determine what a person should do. And that is, surprisingly, in some people's minds, coming from the campus of Hampton University. There is now a hair code as part of a strict academic and dress doctrine for the business administration students at this privately private black university. In this special program, students must maintain a B average after their sophomore year, heed a conservative dress code, complete two internships, meet regularly with business leaders. But here's the rub in some people's eyes. They cannot wear dreadlocks. They cannot wear cornrows. They cannot carry what is deemed extreme hairdos by the university. Callie Crossley, is this bothersome at all? We should note that the dean of the business school says, look, we're just trying to get them ready for the real business world. You don't see CEOs of corporations with these hairstyles.
It's bothersome to me only in that, first of all, extreme hairstyles, period, should be addressed if you're trying to go into the corporate world as we know it. And that reads white corporate world. I mean, that's the bottom line. So I think extreme hairstyles you have to deal with. But at a black institution where you're really talking about a cultural expression on top of your head, I have a problem with that. I think what they're trying to do, because I've been on these college campuses and kids who think they're dressed appropriately for job interviews are not. So maybe what the school is trying to do is say, okay, here we're going to set a strict standard so that you understand what appropriate is and what is not. But it seems to be geared just toward the hairstyles and in a way that suggests that there is something wrong with those hairstyles. And I don't believe that. And I don't think that should be the message. On the other hand, there's a way to have a neat dreadlock and a neat cornrow, and you're perfectly appropriate. Now, if you're talking about banking and you're trying to do some very conservative work, you have to pay attention to that and decide whether or not you want to make a change because that's the atmosphere there. But I think just to make a blanket statement is not appropriate.
Well, it's no wonder that they haven't banned afros, because this proposal is truly rule, regulation. It is truly hair-raising. Dreadlocks in the 21st century. If this were a historically black institution, one might call this rule anti-black or anti-afro, but it's not anti-afro because they allow afros. Heck, I'll say it anyway. It is anti-black. It's also
old-fashioned. Afro,
is old-fashioned, like the black colleges, by the way. All kinds of businesses these days, ventures, allow different hairstyles. These are not hairy situations any longer for employees.
That's what
advertising, music, hip-hop, civil rights groups, banks, yes.
And write to Michael Myers, who suggests that these college campuses or these colleges are old-fashioned. And, Michael, some would say there's nothing wrong with that. That's what we need to get back to. Let me ask you this, Mary. Pick up your point. But the question I'm curious about in your mind is there are some students who would simply say, look, for all of the Stan O'Neills and the Ken Chenaults who head Fortune 500 companies who are African-American, African-Americans haven't made, in sheer numbers, any real headway in corporate America. And it doesn't matter if you try to homogenize yourself.
Well, they would be right in some fields, and that the Chenault and O'Neill would be exceptions. They would be exactly right.
Impossible.
There are other fields in which there has been greater, if I might put it that way, penetration into the employment sector. But the point I wanted to make about it is that the Hampton program is just silly. What they really ought to do is kids can wear whatever they want to class. I mean, that doesn't mean they're going to do it when they go out in the business world. That's true in every field. They should have a class at Hampton. If they don't, on what is appropriate in terms of going out into
exactly.
the business world, what you should wear, how you should dress. And in fact, if kids wear a T-shirt and some raggedy jeans and come to class, and that's what they can afford, I don't care as long as they come to class.
But what of that old adage
that
your mother would say, Mary, practice makes perfect?
Well, my mother would say that, but my mother is also not an idiot. So she would say, if you teach a child and train them up in the
exactly.
way that they should go, when they're old, they will not depart from it. So they need a course on not just that, but even what is appropriate in terms of how you take
yeah.
meals and how you converse.
The problem
so
is nobody's
that,
talking to them about it.
But, well,
but
I think you ought to have
exactly
a course.
Right.
You're
right. You're right. I'm agreeing with you.
Look.
But all right, the other thing that mom would tell us is one at a time, folks.
Okay.
One
right.
at
the
time.
Assumption
and,
is,
mom would tell us that.
The assumption is paternalistic.
Real
the
quick,
assumption
Michael.
The assumption is that, quote, unquote, these kids, these are young adults, not kids, not children, that they don't know proper behavior. They don't know proper dress. That is mm-hmm. the wrong assumption. It is erroneous. It's worse than ridiculous. It's old-fashioned silliness.
All right. We ran out of time. We were going to get to whether or not blacks are connecting with the Winter Olympics controversial remarks made by Bryant Gumbel and also controversy surrounding Shawnee Davis, the speed skater. We'll
the
get that
yes,
later
no.
on.
Yay,
later
Shawnee!
On in the week. Thank you, Mary Francis Berry. Mary Francis Berry, Michael
Yay,
Byers,
Shawnee. That's
Callie Crossley. Thanks so much.